This is Resonance 104.4.
She's gone, and I have to say, meet you all the way.
At last, let's say goodbye to Sunday morning, that grim, hangover-laden period of reflection, regret, recrimination, and, for British listeners, the life-sapping tedium of John Craven's Country File. As the minute hand tips over the clock, let's move into a glorious post-meridian world of scones, cups of tea, car washing, and perhaps a little light gardening. Let's look forward to dozing off in a comfortable chair, perhaps, later this afternoon, waking up 2 hours later in the dark, paralysed with fear and horror at the fast-approaching working week, knowing that there's nothing to eat in the house except for a blackened banana and half an onion. These are the kind of things that have made Sunday afternoon the tour de force it is today. Just a few brief words of introduction. My name's Rodri Marsden. I'll be gently nudging you towards your lunch with a carefully forged alliance of words, music and embarrassed silences, which I will blame entirely on the engineer. Of course, it won't be the engineer's fault. He's a qualified sound technician, and I've never presented a radio programme before. I've had no professional instruction and have sat none of the relevant exams. Still, we're here now, so we'd best plough on. First, some hints as to the content of the show, in case you're worrying that it'll be all smooth Californian rock and keyboard solos. I'll be playing shiny compact discs by The Playwrights, Big Flame, The Vichy Government, Momus, and many others, while the redoubtable, undoubtable, and unputdownable Keith John Adams will be in playing live. Writer, musician, and deep thinker Alex Mayer will be here playing a game called Prove Me Wrong, while sports expert Steve Graziak will report live from his own house on this week's sporting developments. When Westminster Allen analyst Andrew Ward will give his unique insight into the week in politics, which will probably include at least one reference to the time he saw Melvin Hayes stuck in a ticket barrier at Euston Station. Goodness me, if Resonance FM took the surprising step of introducing a licence fee right now, we probably wouldn't be able to afford it. But I know what you're thinking, not because of any peculiarly telepathic powers, I've just got an inkling. You're thinking, I've heard enough of Rosanna by Toto for one day, and you're almost certainly right. So, now, from a live recording in 1975, when I was but 3 years old and blissfully unaware of the unfolding events in Cleveland, Ohio, here are the Numbers Band.
them. Be looking in, on, playing no damn eye game thing, be gone, playing no eye game.
That was 156075, a band known for convenience's sake as the Numbers Band. Because let's face it, it's not easy to remember tricky sequences of numbers. If a band had the fantastic idea of naming themselves after the ratio of the circumference to the diameter of a circle, should they simply call themselves Pi, or should they plump for 3.141592.6? Ponder on that while I tell you that the song you just heard was called About the Eye Game, taken from the extraordinary album Jimmy Bell's Still in Town, which was recorded at a gig on June the 16th, 1975, supporting Bob Marley, and by all accounts, 156075 went down very badly indeed. This time last week, I found myself in Paris. This wasn't a sudden realisation, of course. I deliberately spent time and effort getting there on a train. What I probably mean is that I was in Paris. Through being the boyfriend of a delightful woman who, through her work, sometimes manages to score free trips abroad to swanky hotels in return for a few sentences of gushing prose and a glossy mag, I found myself sitting in a suite at the Plaza Athénée, which probably translates into English as something like Athens Place, which I'm sure you'll agree sounds pretty spectacular. Despite there sadly being no decor to remind you of the Greek capital, no lumps of feta cheese, no crumbling remnants of Olympic stadia, it was truly astonishing in its luxury, and I made the most of it by reclining awkwardly in various pieces of expensive furniture and saying, my, my, this is awfully nice. But the thing about scoring free trips to swanky hotels is that even if the tab for the room is being picked up by somebody else, the little extras are still frighteningly expensive. I don't like ironing, but I'd rather borrow an iron than pay through the nose for hotel laundry to do a fast turnaround on a stripy shirt from H&M. A plastic bottle of Evian mineral water goes for around 59p in my local convenience store in southwest London. But from the minibar of a suite at the Plaza Athénée, just off Paris's Champs-Élysées, it's a cool €10. I stared wide-eyed in panic at Jenny, my partner, waving the price list, wondering how I'd be able to afford to rehydrate myself during the night. She rolled her eyes and gestured towards the tap in the bathroom. I carefully replaced the bottle back in the minibar, being careful not to dislodge a party-sized pack of Pringles lest it burst open and set me back a fiver. In the evening, we decided to head down to the bar before venturing out onto the town. I'd been receiving text messages from friends during the day, informing me of the continuing violence in the banlieue, or suburbs, of Paris. We decided to do our bit to quell the unrest by sitting in chic surroundings, within earshot of racing driver David Coulthard, and sipping on overpriced cocktails. The text messages continued to arrive, warning me that I was but a few miles away from full-scale rioting. These so-called friends seemed almost to be obsessed with the idea that I was going to be maimed, as if they gained some kind of perverse pleasure at imagining me sitting blackened, charred, and rather upset in a burnt-out Renault Mégane. We shrugged off the warnings and headed out to get the metro to Montparnasse. As we left the hotel, waiting paparazzi got several excellent shots of me and Jenny, arguing about directions as they waited for Cameron Diaz to arrive. So if any French listeners saw me in their gossip columns this week, next to umpteen images of an ageing Johnny Hallyday, that's the reason why. We had an excellent dry martini in a Montparnasse bar called, rather wonderfully, Le Select, which was once frequented by Hemingway. That's Ernest the writer, not Wayne the fashion designer. But bars frequented by Hemingway are two a penny in Paris, so we left fairly quickly to grab something to eat across the road. And as we left, the bartender shouted, "Eh, Anglais!" helpfully reminding us of our nationality as we approached the pedestrian crossing. We looked to our left, then our right, and made it safely across to La Coupole, an enormous brasserie, or is it bistro, where there were long queues for a table. Jenny said some kind of password to the doorman, and we were whisked immediately to a prime table at the centre of the restaurant. I was faintly embarrassed by this, and shrugged apologetically to a furious Parisian who was celebrating his birthday by standing in a long queue. We ordered in pathetically stilted French from the menu, not entirely sure what would arrive. Jenny had a tuna salad with some kind of medley of seafood to follow. Unbeknownst to us, that's not the way you do things in France. And as our main course arrived, people at the next table actually pointed and laughed at us. We were the subject of ridicule. So I urge you, listeners, next time you're at an Aberdeen steakhouse in London's West End, as I know you often are, and find yourself sitting next to a hard-nosed French couple who order a Knickerbocker Glory to start and some soup for their main, please point and laugh. Laugh yourself silly. It's the polite thing to do. Let's hear from a one-eyed pop craftsman whose trousers end somewhere around the middle of his shins. That's right, it's Momus.
When Truman Capote spent just one day with Marilyn Monroe, he wrote A Beautiful Child. The book Capote wrote hit the right note, hit the spot. He got Monroe to a T. But Mika Kutsu, aka Mika Lee, what about me? I know you work in electronics, translated all my lyrics, but you're still a mystery. Let's spend a day in Yokohama, riding on a Ferris wheel, and see what we can see. Mika Hakutsu, aka Mika Lee. Princess Kaguya arrived from the moon. She made crazy demands to throw off the men, tagging along, trying to get her into bed. She said, "Don't fuck with my head." Strung up between Yokohama and Palo Alto, you ought to know. Confuse your friends with two homes, confuse your men with two names, just like Norma Jean. Let's spend the day in California, climb a giant redwood tree, and see what we can see. Mika Okutsu, born again, Mika Lee. Go Lively and Tinkerbell are multicultural, but they don't exist. I know you're very, very clever, and you're a star forever, but you're still the great unknown. Let's spend a day in Yokohama, riding on a Ferris wheel, and see who we can be. Mika Akutsu, born again, Mika Lee.
This is Time Wasting with Rodri Marsden on Resonance FM, and that was Mika Akutsu from Momus's excellent album Stars Forever, for which he wrote song portraits of anyone who's prepared to cough up $1,000 towards some astronomical legal bills. Donators get immortalised in song, and Momus avoids going to prison. Everyone's happy. This is a part of the show called Prove Me Wrong. Despite being regarded as one of Britain's top 10 million thinkers, I'm someone whose opinions are very easily swayed. I like to think I've got a strong stance on music and highly developed reasons for liking or disliking various styles, but at the same time I easily managed to persuade myself that Meat Loaf's Bat Out of Hell was a really good record in about 1989, purely because an attractive student nurse called Hannah, who lived in my halls of residence, also really liked it. So, for the next 7 weeks, I'll be attempting to widen my musical perspectives with the help of various movers and shakers who could be bothered to get up on a Sunday morning and come to central London. In the process, I'll obviously be giving over a large proportion of the show to music I may not actually like very much, which demonstrates what a truly selfless DJ I really am. So today, on Prove Me Wrong, I have with me slick pop craftsman and cultural philosopher Alex Mayer from Baxendale, also known as Alexander's Festival Hall. Alex, hello.
Good morning, Roger. Can I just point out that I'm not actually in any way a student nurse? I don't know if this is going to work with slot, personally, but anyway.
Well, no, you don't look like a student nurse, that is very true. What are we talking about today? I understand it's something, some kind of minimal micro-house nonsense?
Yes, I'm afraid it's a genre that I've rather taken to heart recently, which is... Well, it sort of defies any particular term, but it's somewhere between glitch house, micro-house and whorehouse, depending on who you are.
Whorehouse. I've not come across whorehouse in any sense of the word.
Sadly, it has nothing to do with Dolly Parton, but it's a sort of appalling, falling apart record sampling style, where typical house beats, but lots and lots of insane use of source material for the actual samples that break it up.
Okay, and this...
It's very unsmooth, Roger, so I'm assuming you're going to hate it.
Is it less smooth than playing Your Game, Baby by Barry White?
That's the question. It's a lot less smooth.
So what is it? Is it micro house? Is it filtered disco? Post tech step? What is this?
Well, it's kind of, house music has this sort of dire reputation. If you say the words house music to people, they tend to think something blasting out of a bar somewhere in Leicester Square, four on the floor, the odd euphoric sort of soulful vocal banging over the top, and everybody sort of punching the air. Glitch house, micro house, whore house, whatever you want to call it this week. Is sort of all the beats compressed to almost bugger all.
Right.
I can say that on the radio.
No, you can.
And, with,
say it again if you like.
Bugger all,
right.
Student nurse.
Yeah.
And with, very, very small and odd use of samples to kind of make this kind of goofy mess.
Okay, so basically you believe that this is a solution to the horror of Four on the Floor, Leicester Square, disco type stuff.
Yeah, this is, and I wasn't really someone who listens to a great deal of dance music generally. And I heard this and just thought, wow, that's goofy, amazing computer game dance music of the future.
So okay, well, let's see if I can be convinced. What's the first track you've brought in?
Well, this is sort of an acknowledged classic of the genre.
Uh-huh.
Deck the House by a guy from Canada called Marc Leclerc, who trades under the name of Acufen.
Let's hear that now, shall we?
Two.
So that was Acufen, brought in by Alex Mayer, a.k.a. Alexander's Festival Hall, in his attempt to persuade me that Mike Crowhouse, Whorehouse...
Glitch House
is worth listening to. I found it somewhat austere.
Austere? I thought... I mean, my associating adjective for this is goofy.
Okay.
I agree that's not quite smooth.
But are you happy to associate yourself with the adjective goofy as well?
I think when offered the alternative of slick house or some kind of ghastly, professional, sophisticated house, then yes, goofy.
I mean, it doesn't really kick in at any point, does it? There's no wave of euphoria in a way that I associate with
dance
music. Well,
I suppose it's a bit less obvious, isn't it? And the beats are all a bit smaller. But like in all dance music, it's very functional. It's all about technique, and it eventually will get you moving, and it does build in just the same ways as all the other dance music that's a bit like that.
So. But okay, when I like to move my body, it's just something like Dance Yourself Dizzy by Liquid Gold. I mean, that's not particularly all about technique. That's about kind of passion and soul. I mean, that's actually what I associate you with. And your music is always full of soaring, beautiful melodies. And this has kind of the resonance of a sort of knitting needle tapping a biscuit tin.
I saw your index finger moving, Rodri. You can't fool me.
Index finger.
I know this is radio.
I move my index finger when last time someone wine is on television.
Give it a couple of years. No, I think the what happens is, like any obscure musical subgenre, once you delve into enough of it, you start to appreciate the sort of inner workings. And there are lots of records like this, and they're all, you know, pretty much of a muchness. I mean, the Acufen album is all basically the same song in different styles, but sometimes it'll be a very uplifting little 2 picoseconds of a AM radio show from 1976. You know,
or indeed, maybe this radio show could be immortalised in the same way.
I'm sure you could cut this up, you know, and have it large. Possibly not what you want to do on a Sunday, though.
No, no. Let's have it just medium sized for the moment.
Okay.
This genre obviously kind of slid off the pages of The Wire, I suppose, in many ways, and. And we can account for its popularity through that in some ways.
I think it's, I mean, it's a sort of extension of Cologne minimal house music, minimal techno, and I mean Cologne is kind of a state of mind in sort of dance music. There's, you know, you can be anywhere in the world and be doing something that small, and there will be people who love it, you know, and who will dance around to something that sounds incredibly tight.
And tiny.
Tiny, yes. Tiny but loud.
What's the next track that you've brought in?
The next track is a slightly more relaxed, but a more restrained version of what we've just heard, essentially. A track called Bucolic by Mossa.
Okay, let's hear that
see
right
this
now.
Wins you over.
Okay. Alex, remind me what that was again, would you?
That was a track called Bucolic by Mossa.
Okay. It seems that these tracks are very painstakingly constructed, almost kind of the Jenga of musical building.
Yeah, that's not a bad analogy. I mean,
is it? I just wrote it down just during that last track, so I haven't been labouring over that.
No, and it came out smoothly, if I'm being so bold. Yeah, I think the sort of way it's all put together is, I mean, as I said before, it seems to be about you know, how you actually get to that level of technique is one of the things you end up admiring, I suppose, when you're hearing it, like, my God, how did that come together? But
yeah.
But what I also liked about it was also there's this sort of very strangely unmade quality to a lot of the tracks in this genre. They're sort of, it almost feels like the early hip-hop days where you've got these samples, car crashing in and out really lamely. They don't really fit. You know, for years, technology and computers have made everything sound very, very premeditated.
Yeah.
And Oh, so some of these sort of glitchy whorehouse records just sound very accidental, which is quite fun.
What is the link between prostitutes and this form of music?
Oh, it's the kind of thing people say in Hoxton.
Oh, is it
really?
Okay. But Keith John Adams is in, who's playing later on the show, is currently in Hoxton, and I wish he'd get a move on because he's on in 20 minutes.
Well, I'm sure this channel can be received in Hoxton. So
I'm sure.
You can talk him down. No, and the sort of sequencing element of it, I find it interesting personally because I, you know, like everybody else, it seems, on the planet, use a sequencer to write music. And the idea of spending years trying to get everything locked down and then hearing something that sounds so marvellously car crashy all over the place is kind of quite interesting to me. So how do you engineer accidents, I suppose, or leave room for things to sound quite spontaneous?
And is this an influencing your own music making in any regard?
I don't really make dance music, but it interests me as a strategy, if you like. It's like another card in the deck you can use to go, okay, well, maybe it's okay if it sounds all over the shop, you know, which is always, I think, quite empowering, really, for a muso.
You have brought in with you a track. Is it your forthcoming single?
This is actually... I got asked to do a song for a Christmas album,
okay,
which is obviously an extreme honour for any musician, for a label called Le Grand Magistri in the USA,
who
released Baxendale Records as well. And, it's sort of a nice challenge, really. I thought, you know, it's Christmas. I wanted to write a song about losing your girlfriend to some guy who's got it all, and of course on a Christmas record that could only be Santa, really. So.
Indeed, a reindeer incorporated in any way.
Somebody did point out to me the other day that the backing vocals do sound elven, but I don't really know how to take that. It's some sort of Orlando Bloom thing.
I take it with a big compliment, big slice of compliment.
Well, I may do. I think askance was the look I was broadcasting at that exact moment, but...
Okay, well, let's all look askance as we listen to... What was it called, Alex?
This song is called Silent Nights, and I want to point out that Nights is actually spelled N-I-T-E-S.
Oh, genius. Silent Night by Alexander's Festival Hall?
Indeed.
Here we go.
It's kicking off up at the North Pole. You met some guy with a bag, and now you're through with all that being alone. I'm trying hard to reach you, but I'm burning up here lost in the snow. Is there no way to get this December heart unfroze?
That was Alexander's Festival Hall with Silent Night. He's playing at the Marquee in London on Wednesday evening. I find Sunday newspapers large, unwieldy and completely impenetrable, and need my information about sport, business, politics and celebrity gossip distilled into handy, manageable packages. So what I do is turn to my friends and acquaintances and ask them for brisk 3-minute rundowns of the things I should really know about. And for my sporting knowledge, I turn to sports writer and Sainsbury's employee, Steve Graziak. Oh, hang on, Steve. Are you there?
I am, yeah.
We've got some nasty feedback here, so we're just dealing with that.
Okay.
The first rule of radio is, of course, no dead air. The second is don't feedback horribly.
Okay, sorry about that.
Oh, but yeah. Now you're here now, so it's very good to have you here, or at least your disembodied voice.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. I don't know where the feedback came from. It's probably some strange thing within my flat, I would imagine.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Anyway, do go on.
Okay, sorry about that. Did you ever get any of that first bit I read out then?
No, I think you should start again.
Well, I'll start again very professionally. Good afternoon, Rodri. The big footballing story of the weekend, as I was saying, has to be the revelation that the Manchester United dressing room was bugged before, during and after United's win against Chelsea last Sunday. Apparently you can clearly hear Sir Alex Ferguson giving tactical advice and inspirational speeches before the match and at half-time. I believe you can also hear Darren Fletcher after the match on his mobile asking his mum to find several thousand lottery tickets. I mean, did Fletcher really mean that goal? 3 words for you, in no particular order. Dig, blind and truffle. Meanwhile, in tennis, Tim Henman has not ruled out being fit at the start of the new season after a rib injury ruled him out of last week's Paris Masters. Scans have apparently revealed that the injury did not come about as a result of general wear and tear on Henman's body, came after Henman laughed too hard when he heard that Greg Rizetsky was on the verge of becoming British number one again. The carpet burns he also received as a result of what they call on the internet rolling on the floor and laughing my head off are expected to heal in time for next year's Wimbledon now. In golf, bunker-threatening Frenchman Jean van der Velde has said he will respond to the decision to allow women to play in the Open Championship by applying to play in the Women's Open, and as a result will shave his legs and wear a kilt to help his application. Rumours that Colin Montgomery will also be applying under sponsorship to Playtex are yet to be confirmed. Ear-chomping nutter and occasional boxer Mike Tyson is in trouble with the authorities again. He's in trouble as a result of assaulting a cameraman in a Sao Paulo nightclub. Apparently he was in South America appearing on Diego Maradona's Argentinian chat show, and showed up at the Brazilian courtroom in an Argentina shirt. Best of luck finding a sympathetic jury there, Mike. Shock news from the world of athletics yesterday. A sprinter was banned for taking steroids. I don't even know why they bother even reporting these stories anymore. It's a bit like a news headline that would read, water found in oceans, or Newcastle chased new player. I think athletics authorities should address the drug problem in athletics by having an addict game, held in Colombia, of course, featuring events such as the hypodermic javelin. The chief executive of Wembley Stadium has announced that the stadium might not be completed by its March the 31st deadline due to potential cold weather this winter. When they drew up the plans for the stadium, were they planning on building Wembley in Alice Springs or something and then flying it to London in time for the FA Cup final? Having said that, Sports Minister Richard Caborn is confident that the project will be finished on time. I hear he's going to the site to put some salt down and take a kettle of hot water to thaw things out a bit. And, in a blaze of enormous publicity, the BBC have relaunched Pot Black, which is now broadcast weekly on Grandstand. I was as surprised as anyone. Grandstand is still going, but it's still good to see the BBC trying to bring back an old snooker idea into the new millennium, just as long as they don't get Fatboy Slim to remix Snooker Loopy for their theme tune or anything like that. And also, Rodri, I know you were alarmed by this thing I found on the BBC Sports website, this snooker top trumps thing. I know you saw that and was alarmed by it as I was.
Absolutely. I mean, it's referred to as Dennis Taylor's snooker top trumps. Whether I don't know whether he's happy with being associated with that, or indeed whether he wrote the code for the actual game. But it is quite an astonishing piece of internet tomfoolery.
Well, I mean, the most alarming thing about it for me was I think I had Peter Ebdon as my card, and I thought to myself, well, he's got about 70% sex appeal on there. He was up against Cliff Thorburn. I thought, well, that's a dead cert for me. Turned over the card, Cliff Thorburn has 83% sex appeal.
The other alarming statistics I found is that Terry Griffiths has a 63% sex appeal, and Tony Drago has 70% flamboyance, which is kind of quite astounding.
Well, I mean, he's Mediterranean, he's very flamboyant, isn't he, I suppose, but I mean, being a heterosexual male, I wouldn't know about these types of things, but you'll have to get some of your female listeners, the heterosexual female listeners, to tell you whether they think Cliff Thorburn really deserves 83% sex appeal, because quite frankly, I can't see it myself.
No, well, if anyone does want to go and play this game, I can't read out the URL, but if you go to timewasting.net/radio, there is a link to the game on the page. Steve, thanks very much for talking to us today. Have you got anything else planned for the rest of the day?
I was probably going to just nip to Sainsbury's and do a bit of checkout work, I think.
Good.
Nice kind of way of spending your day, do a bit of a radio slot on a London radio station, and then go and serve some people some bacon and some rolls and what have you.
Excellent. Well, for a shot in the arm to get you through the next 2.5 minutes at least, here is the abrasive sound of Big Flame. Big Flame there, whose jerky rhythms and explosive guitars provided the soundtrack to my teenage years. Although, as they only recorded about 40 minutes worth of material in their entire career, I must have listened to each song several hundred times, for which I'd now like to apologise to my parents and sister, with whom I was living at the time. It can't have been easy for them. But they benefited in other ways, mainly through the fact that I generally stayed in my room and didn't attempt to work through my teenage hormonal crises in their presence, so perhaps no apology is necessary. So, Finland. Consider Finland, if you will. What has it given us? Sibelius? A holiday destination where the sun doesn't set for 73 days during the summer? It might not seem like much, but they also gave us 9-piece show band who sang about hedgehogs, fish, and the disgraceful treatment of Nigerian activist Ken Sarawiwa. They produced 4 impeccably crafted albums before they split up about 3 years ago. And their name, rather splendidly, was Ultra Bra. Ultra Bra.
kiristä tahtia ja hengästyy. Hän ei ajattele painajia eikä mielisairaita, vaan katsoo kahta siltaa, jotka ylittävät meren. Näkee monia kasveja, joita ei mainitse nimeltään.
Mitä ei voisi hermostuttaa naista, joka elää vapaa Herran elämää. Uuden vuoden jälkeen astuu kirkkoon pitsissä, ja monina aamuina herätessään muisti juuri nähneensä raan väkivaltaisia unia.
Katselee ikkunan takana kulkevaa tietä, selailee lehtiä ja huvittuu. Hän ei kuuntele puhelinta eikä vaatimuksia, vaan näkee yhden sillan, jonka alla kiskot kulkevat. Tietää monia päiviä, joina ei liikennöi junia.
Mikään ei voisi hermostuttaa naista, joka elää vapaa Herran elämää. Uuden vuoden jälkeen astuu kirkkoon pitsissä, ja monina aamuina herätessään muisti juuri nähneensä raan väkivaltaisia unia. Mikään ei voisi
was Helsinki's Ultra Bra with Nainen Joka Elä Vapaaherran Elämää. Don't ask me to spell it because we'd be here all day, frankly. Don't ask me what it means because I don't know. And don't ask me to say it again because you heard it the first time. Right, it's time to go over to our Glasgow studio, by which I mean I've got a CD here of my Glasgow-based friend Neil Scott talking into his battered laptop at some point over the weekend. And here he is with a suitably serious and discussion-provoking Thought for the Week.
When Rodri asked me to do a Thought for the Week, I immediately scoured my mind for glimmers of wisdom. What I found, unfortunately, were a few tarnished half-truths and clichés. What I found was that wisdom is quite banal. It simplifies complex matters into one-liners, like, don't judge a book by its cover, or clothes make the man. Contradictions for a world that knows everything and understands nothing. I mean, whilst destruction is a bad thing, if it highlights desperate poverty and injustice, as it did in France this week, 'tis surely a good thing. It all depends on what came before. For it is the narrative that makes wisdom resonate. Wisdom always comes after the event, never before. Decisions are only informed by it, not made with it. So instead of meditating on my words, why not meditate on what you did today when you wake up tomorrow morning? Ask yourself, what did I do? What did it mean? That, rather than any sermon or aphorism, is the beginning of wisdom.
Wise, wise words there from one of Britain's very many resourceful, thoughtful, intelligent, and indeed unemployed men, Neil Scott. It's been a bad working week for me, possibly the worst since I spent 4 long days on the phone to Russian customs officials back in 1999 to persuade them to allow Slayer's guitar amps to cross the Finno-Russian border. This week was also spent on the telephone with the supposedly much easier task of finding 12 celebrities who might tell me about a particularly special meal they'd eaten, an ultimate food experience, which was to be featured in a certain Sunday newspaper and which British listeners will be able to find on their newsstands next weekend. I relished this easy task and the £220 I'd receive for undertaking it, thinking that it might take, what, a day and a half at most to put together. But I was totally unprepared for the unwillingness of your average celeb to spout 30 words about some grub they like. As you might imagine, there's a gigantic wall of agents, managers, PRs and PAs to prevent your average bloke, i.e. me, from assailing busy public figures with trivial questions like, "Hello, have you had any nice food recently?" Daniel Craig, the new James Bond, was, according to his PR, Amelia Hallett, out of the country. Well, that's fine and dandy, but I'm not asking to spend the night with the man. I just want 30 words about food. This is the 21st century and we take international communication for granted, but being abroad is still, it seems, a trusty excuse to avoid speaking to someone, especially me. I worked through my list very rapidly and had to go back to my editor for more names. One on the list, Nicholas Saunders, founder of Neil's Yard in Covent Garden, was someone I was happy to let off the hook after discovering that he had been dead for the last 7 years. Next, I ended up trying to locate rock legend Alice Cooper. "I'm sorry," said Candy, his PR, "but we're only doing things which will help his current tour." She concluded by saying, "I can offer you Foster and Allen if you like." "Well, thank you, Candy, but I'm not that desperate. Not just yet." Political reporter John Sargent replied to my email promptly, explaining at length that he was currently on a diet and that recalling any gastronomic delights from his past would not be possible under the circumstances. In the time he'd taken to tell me that, he could have just told me that he really likes lobster and I could have ticked one more person off the list. But no. Most annoying were the people who couldn't even be bothered to say no. Michael Winner, you are a loathsome scumbag. Terry Gilliam, I've never managed to sit through Brazil. Kristin Scott Thomas, I find your haughty ice queen shtick somewhat transparent. And Rufus Sewell, I couldn't pick you out in an ID parade if you were wearing a smoking jacket monogrammed with the phrase "actor Rufus Sewell." In the end, I had to rely on friends to send me the personal mobile phone numbers of whatever famous people they knew. Within 2 hours, I had the private contact details of a dizzying array of people. Former Tory leader Ian Duncan Smith, former BBC Royal reporter Jenny Bond, former Radio 1 DJ Mark Radcliffe, former newsreader John Suchet. They all used to be somebody. Surely now, slightly removed from the media glare, they could help a writer in distress. In the end, my bacon was saved by Paul Gambaccini, who came up with a delightful story about eating vichyssoise and lobster while overlooking the wedding procession of Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer. It's not something I ever thought I'd say, but thank God for Paul Gambaccini. Few people are stupid enough to form a 9-piece band these days. With musicians living on and below the poverty line, the last thing you want to do is share your meagre royalty check with a sullen guitarist who contributes virtually nothing creative to the musical unit and actually owes you £20 from that time you succumbed to his pleading for a minicab home after he missed his night bus back to Ealing Broadway. However, Croydon band Do Me Bad Things do have 9 members and have managed so far not to implode in a barrage of fist fighting and hair pulling. They have 5 singers, which some people might say is too many singers, but I say if a pudding's worth over-egging, then you should really, really egg that pudding. Tommy Shotton from the band will be here next week to play the Prove Me Wrong game, so it only seems fair that I should trail his appearance by playing one of his songs.
Make it shorter for the radio. Oh,
Do Me Bad Things there, and in the studio I can welcome Keith John Adams, who has been driving like a maniac across London, having woken up with a bad hangover in Hackney. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, and I don't even live in Hackney. But the thing is, whenever I go anywhere, I always forget to factor in the fact that there are other people using the road. So whenever I think about a journey time, it's for 4 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday.
Right.
And I had that problem coming here.
Okay. Well, in future, when you wake up, it's generally kind of around 8 or 9 o'clock. So future reference. Just bear that in mind.
It was a weird thing when you were playing that Christmas record earlier.
Yes.
Because I was enjoying the show, by the way, driving in.
Thank you very much. Glad to have you here.
And there was just as you started playing the Christmas song and it was reaching its kind of climax, there was the weirdest Santa Claus I ever saw. He looked like a sort of overweight crack addict in a full Santa outfit, just kind of hanging around on the side of the by the meat market in near Spitalfields.
Delightful.
Anyway, it was good.
Are you okay? You look. Are you relaxed?
Yeah. No, I'm a bit hyper, but that's good. Yeah, I like being hyper anyway.
Welcome to the studio, Keith. You're well known as a London troubadour who sings his amusing ditties around town. I know you'll hate me saying that. But you've come here to play us a song, so maybe you could do that and then have a seat and maybe have a cup of coffee and then we can have another one later on. How does that sound?
It sounds lovely.
Okay, well, why don't you just play us a song to earn your cup of coffee? What's it called?
I'm going to do She's Your Dad.
Okay, fine.
So flattered by her attention and the mention of my invention. I was flattered, I was thrilled, I was willed, I was pilled, I was killed. But you said no, 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 no. She's your dad, she's your dad, she's your dad. You said no, 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 no. She's your dad, she's your dad, she's your dad. I wasn't hassled by her emotion, nor the notion of her devotion. I wasn't hassled, I wasn't hurt, I wasn't baffled by that little flirt, but you said no, 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 no. She's your dad, she's your dad, she's your dad. You said no, 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 no. She's your dad, she's your dad, she's your dad. Let's go, London. I was so bolstered by her insistence that we kissed, dance, and go the distance. I wasn't bolstered because it was great. Seems so late for a date, but fate was great. But you said no, 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 no. She's your dad, she's your dad, she's your dad. You said no, 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 no. She's your dad, she's your dad, she's your dad. You said no, 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 no. She's your dad, she's your dad, she's your dad. You said no, 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 no. She's your dad, she's your dad, she's your dad.
Lovely, Keith. Thank you very much indeed. Wrong one. Oh, well, never mind. What should we do with that? Let's find the right backing track because it's of paramount importance. Maybe we can work out which one it is. Keith, have you got something to say while we flounder around here?
Oh, yeah, I've got an album.
Oh, it's number 4. There we go, Jamie.
I've got a website and an album.
Okay, well, why don't you do it over the old theme music to Weekend World?
Oh, great.
Just
if you like that song, go to www.keithjohnadams.com. You can buy albums.
That was, of course, the old theme tune to hard-hitting current affairs show Weekend World, and indeed a very small section of the unwieldy and largely unlistenable piece of music Nantucket Sleigh Ride by deafening US Rockers Mountain. The song usually signifies that there's some heavyweight political analysis on the way, but in the absence of that, I've got the next best thing, a Brighton-based record company accountant with a hat obsession. Hopefully Andrew Ward, for that's his name, won't mind if I play a smooth MOR backing track behind his analysis of the week in politics. Andrew, are you hearing me?
I am hearing you. I'm hearing your voice.
Well, so what has been happening this week in politics? Because I've been painfully away from newspapers writing this drivel. So maybe you could fill me in.
I'd love to, Rotary. This week was, of course, the week that was the week in which Tony Blair's authority was rocked by his first ever defeat in the House of Commons, when his plans to allow police to detain terrorist suspects for up to 90 days was voted down by 31 MPs. Who instead passed an amendment by David Winnick, which allowed detention for 28 days. The scale of the rebellion was such that it very nearly quashed Winnick's amendment, which would have made his eyes water. That was a joke, you see. The BBC's website has a page called Have Your Say, on which the public are not only permitted but encouraged to have their say, and on which Tom of London said about the terror bill that the puppet government that's ruining this country is slowly moving us towards a police state.
Hello, Andrew.
Hello, I'm really, really sorry. My computer's just crashed. In hilarious, let's banter.
Okay, we can do that.
Quick, improvise.
All right, does your remit cover kind of royal gaffes? Your roving remit as a kind of a reporter of the week, you know, the week in politics, the week in news. I noticed this morning that the Prince of Wales has called senior Chinese diplomats appalling old waxworks, which is, obviously a breach of protocol in some way.
I hadn't noticed that. However, I did buy the Times today, and I noticed that the Queen has been named as an enemy of Islam.
She must be worried about that. I mean, you know, there's not much security around her house in London, of course.
There's the odd copper or two, as far as I know. However, you can get in, as far as I'm aware. Also, you can get in by pretending to be a visitor.
We're having some problems here, but that's fine. how do you feel about the about them flying back the MPs at great expense to vote in the vote during the week?
Well, it was. I don't mind the expense, frankly, because I'm. You know, I mean, I'm a taxpayer, and there's about 60 million of us, and between us, it's probably a halfpenny or two. That's my computer just logging back on there.
Oh, well, that's okay. Can we not get MPs? I mean, when MPs vote in the House of Commons, it's on record, isn't it? I mean, we know what they vote in because there are logs telling us what they voted. So why can't they just kind of phone in their vote? Surely, if it works for the Eurovision Song Contest, it can work for a Western democracy.
I think it would be better as well if we had the lovely announcers with awkward accents in the Swiss announcers or something, rather than Michael Martin saying the eyes to the right and the nose to the left.
So something like Jack Straw, or whatever. That could work for me.
It would work for me, and it would be lovely, and there would be a cravat element, of course, which I would like, as you know.
Any particular hats would suit this this...
I think a cloche.
A cloche.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, Andrew, is your computer up, or should we just move on?
No, I'm willing to continue.
Oh, why don't you continue, and then we'll go straight into the next track. Go on.
I'm sorry for ruining your show.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's been quite slick up till this point, but carry on.
No, seamless. Elsewhere in the news, Tory leadership hopeful David Davis and David Cameron clashed over the issue of pants, with Tory leadership hopeful David Davis telling Radio 4's Women's Hour that he wore briefs, while Tory leadership hopeful David Cameron preferred boxers. Tory leadership hopeful David Davis was also criticised for saying they preferred blondes to brunettes. But according to The Telegraph, a spokesman insisted that the row was minor compared to the humiliating Commons defeat for Tony Blair. That spokesman had a point, in my view. Elsewhere in the news, the voter of Hillsdale, Michigan, made headlines in Hillsdale, Michigan, by electing an 18-year-old boy as the mayor of Hillsdale, Michigan. Michael Sessions ran on a platform of increasing the number of full-time firefighters in Hillsdale, in Michigan, from 3 to 4. The Times reported that the U.S. Conference of Mayors was asked if Michael Sessions was the youngest American ever to be elected as a mayor. However, the U.S. Conference of Mayors responded that they didn't know because they don't actually keep records about that. Of course, when electing a mayor, it's very easy to be swept up in the buzz of voting for someone who might be the youngest American ever to be elected as mayor, or who might not, because the U.S. Conference of Mayors don't actually keep records about that. But you do need to be careful that you're not voting for someone who's motivated purely by a superficial love of gold chains and a tricorn hat. You're probably wondering if anything else has caught my satirical eye this week.
I am.
Well, not really. Okay. Rodri, has anything caught your satirical eye this week?
No, indeed not. And maybe we should just move on. And maybe buy a printer as well. So next week you can just print the thing out and then you have, you know, paper. You can always rely on paper. That's
I've run out of printer paper for reasons that you know about. I had to write that cartoon.
Oh, no, yeah, no, I remember the cartoon. Anyway, Andrew, many thanks. Do you have maybe a request that you might like to hear or perhaps dedicate to your lovely wife, Fiona, bearing in mind that I don't actually have any CDs to hand?
I'd like the song Xanadu by ELO.
Well, I'm afraid I don't have that. What I can give you is a 2-minute vignette straight from Belfast's Shankhill Road.
That'd be lovely.
Ta-ra.
Can I apologise to your listeners?
That's fine.
Listener.
Your shirt is high and your nervous smile, it won't do you much good. Put your CV and listen to me, it's us they want, not you. Cause we're secretarial, elite. Secretarial, elite. Secretarial, elite. We give a first class service to every company, stand on street corners to please our agency. Excel access, £10 an hour, you'll be mopping up in Starbucks, but we've got the power. Secretarial elite. Secretarial elite. Secretarial elite. Data entry, then internet breaks. The way it's been since Sweet 16. While you hid in your room with Joy Division, we got ourselves careers. A secretarial elite. Secretarial elite. Secretarial elite. Pieces of meat they stick on reception to entice the clients inside. But when it's 6 p.m. the work's still not done. They want their asses on the photocopier. So much for secretarial elite. Secretarial elite. Secretarial elite. But every night when we returned our Fulham flat, we let out a tiny tear. A lower dinner from Waitrose tasted so nice, it can't console the indignity of labour. Count your chef lucky, you're just secretarial effete. Secretarial effete. We're secretarial elite. Secretarial elite. 250 words per minute. That's secretarial elite.
As you might have guessed, that was Secretarial Elite by the Vichy government, who were recently described by some woman at Bristol Station who watched them lugging their gear onto a train as a couple of losers. Jamie Manners, the man whose rounded vowels you just heard, almost became my new flatmate this week after my current flatmate, Mark, accepted a job project managing for some oil company in Dubai after several years counselling men who have a history of violence against women. A bizarre career move, but no doubt a lucrative one. Anyway, it's time to return to Keith John Adams to find out if he's maybe come up with something he'd like to plug, maybe a book or a film or cookery series on cable TV.
The new Terry Gilliam film. I'd like to plug that.
Okay. Do you make any special appearances in that?
No, I've got no. I'm not involved at all.
Terry Gilliam.
But you gave him a bit of a hard time.
I did give him a hard time earlier.
He's a bit of a hero of mine.
I don't hate him really. I was just a bit annoyed that he couldn't tell me what his favourite food was. I mean, it's not much to ask.
You should have asked me because I've got his daughter's email address.
Oh really?
I could have got.
What's her first name?
I can't remember. Is it? It's not, I can't remember.
So her email address might well be gilliamdaughter@hotmail.com or...
Yeah. She is defined by that. Unfortunate, isn't it, when you've got a dad like that, I suppose.
I suppose so.
But he pays her to do his PR stuff, so...
Yeah. I think he pays her to be his daughter, which would be an extraordinary family arrangement, and one that I wouldn't mind having with my own parents, to be honest.
Yeah.
At the moment.
But they do kind of pay you, don't they, for the... They give you lodging for free, and they feed you. I mean, and they give you a little bit of money for a while.
Well, that's true, and they just paid for my flat to be rewired as well. I don't want you to think that I...
Did you blackmail them by saying that you were in danger of electrocution?
I said that if they paid for my flat to be rewired, I wouldn't mention it on the radio. Keith, you're back with us, which is delightful. Are you playing a gig soon? Or
no.
Oh, you have an album out. You said that over Nantucket Sleigh Ride earlier. You've done that.
Yeah, I've actually got very little to plug right now, but okay. I'm going to be busier next year.
Okay, and if...
So you'll have to have me back.
But if we wanted to encounter you, maybe we'd find you propping up the various bars of Hoxton.
I got to knock that on the head.
Well, you've got a bit of a reputation as a drinker.
I know. And this week, actually, I had a day without a hangover.
Oh, well done.
Well, I got up, but the thing is, I felt terrible. And I realised that the hangover is a good way of masking the fact that I feel terrible in the mornings anyway.
Right.
So, and I get the bonus of being drunk the night before.
Oh, marvellous. Yeah. Maybe you'd like to buck yourself up by playing us another tune.
Okay.
Because I think the Doobie Brothers backing track here is about to kind of elapse.
Have you looked these?
Oh, yeah. Nice. I've tried to avoid any kind of vocals. You don't want
play
Michael...
them as tracks, just like 5 minutes.
10 minutes each, yeah. Okay. Keith, what are you going to sing for
us? I'm going to play Torch.
Oh, I do like this song.
This is from my album, yeah.
Beautiful song. Keith John Adams with Torch.
Someone shone a torch in your heart. Someone shone a torch in your heart. Someone shone a torch in your heart. And it was dark, and it was dark. They shouted out your name and they waited for echo. Out flew a bat, run a rat and a gecko. You've grown so incapable of seeing beauty. But look at you now, you're inspired and you're fruity. Someone shone a torch in your heart. Someone shone a torch in your heart. Someone shone a torch in your heart. And it was fun, yeah, it was fun. In your heart. Na 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 na. Na 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 na. It wasn't just a cardiovascular surgeon, and now there's a light of its own that's emerging. Someone is painting the walls and the ceiling. They're doing it up for some incoming feeling. Someone shone a torch in your heart. Someone shone a torch in your heart. Someone shone a torch in your heart. And it was love. Yeah, it was love. In your heart.
Keith, thank you very much for coming in. I'm overjoyed you
Thanks
were able to
me.
Come here. Here are next week's guests on the Time Wasting Show. It's Bristol's finest and indeed only exponents of unpredictable tunes in tricky, lopsided 7/8 time signatures. It's the Playwrights.
I found a river and built on it nothing major. Small operation, self-built, no significant changes. I have familiar places, a clear view, a few friendly faces. But you spent what's to slumber like a perfect town centre. Ravaged by wartime bombs and the developed
That was the Playwrights with Fear of Open Spaces, bringing us to the end of this first show, a show that began as a tiny seed of hope and possibility, and pretty much remained a tiny seed of hope and possibility while I padded out the 90 minutes with some music I like and some friends that I don't find too boring. I trust that you've appreciated our efforts and may even tune in next week to hear The Indefensible being defended in Prove Me Wrong. I believe it's going to feature Norwegian black metal, so there should be a few laughs. And live music, as previously mentioned, from The Playwrights. Thanks to Keith and Alex for coming in, and to Jamie, the engineer, who ensured that the programme didn't consist entirely of long silences followed by several people talking at once. Regular listeners to this station will have twigged that our building is not a vast, interconnected network of studios between which messages are carried by underpaid errand boys. There is only one studio, and changeovers tend to be slightly awkward affairs during which chairs are knocked over while the incoming presenter offers hollow words of praise for a show that they might not actually have been able to listen to. But to ensure that you, the listener, is oblivious to all of this, we tend to finish shows on Resonance FM by putting on a really, really long record. in order to give us sufficient time to clear up our stuff and get the hell out. Today's choice is Wurde Iter, a 39-minute opus performed by those cape-wearing, language-inventing lunatics Magma, and which should be curtailed after 2 or 3 minutes if everything goes to plan. Thank you for listening, and do stay tuned for Tom Chivers, who will be along imminently with his contemporary poetry show. Goodbye.
to